Okay. R2P and refugee regime, what role for R2P? My basic argument is this. The coupling of R2P and the refugee regime reinforces the preventive principle of R2P, pillars 1 and 2 particularly. I think that's very clear over the last 2 days. That has been lost for many due to focus drawing its birth pangs on the military use of force, the end point of pillar 3. Shifting this focus puts political attention back on the prevention of atrocity crimes and points up neatly the double standards of liberal powers of which major member states of the EU, when they commit to foreign intervention in the name of humanity, but refuse asylum seekers. And it's a clear point across all of us, and is obviously a very important one to make. On the other hand, bringing this principle to bear on the refugee crisis and the refugee regime as a whole risks dissolving intergovernmental and political consensus around the source and purpose of R2P, helping to protect civilians from the 4 atrocity crimes and holding to account for appropriate measures states that perpetrate mass violence. There's no easy way to ride the horns of this dilemma. Rather, I think, Jason's doing something else by wanting to rethink normative entrepreneurship. Rather than seeking to extend it with a new set of rules for vulnerable peoples, one should, I think, emphasize more that political judgment and political responsibility lie at the basis of these choices, more than rulemaking or rule extension as such, and that focus on the former rather than the latter practice is, at least for the present, more important. Since political judgment has always been at the heart of the principle of R2P and its relevance to the suffering world, I wish to link it with the refugee regime today serves to highlight how the norm is always also political and requires political as much as moral responsibility. Now, while increasingly understood, and I'm very aware that there are several articles that have come out emphasizing this kind of point in the last few years, and that they've been very much taken up by people like Jennifer Welsh and others, while increasingly understood, this last point bears repeating, I think, and emphasis. R2P, so here's my emphasis first. R2P is about taking effective preventive action at the earliest possible stage against the emergence of mass atrocities. Only when such action is either not possible or proves ineffective does the use of military force become a credible and legitimate alternative. Bringing R2P to bear upon the refugee asylum regime allows one to refocus the R2P lens on these preventive stages. We heard, again, a lot about that. That said, the endpoint of the use of military force is not, I think, just an empirical endpoint. It does underlie in some ways the structural logic of the principle of R2P as such, at least to date. Since in a system of states there will be neither effective prevention nor military intervention unless particular states will it, from aid and logistics to military force, the principle of R2P frames, but is equally informed by, state political will. If a state wills its international responsibility, then national and humanitarian interests will have been aligned. This alignment is an act of political imagination, judgment and struggle, as we know so well through the failures like Syria, through which the international norm of R2P is born nationally, is internalized nationally. These moments can never be made secondary, I would argue, especially in the context, Chloe's context, of people crossing borders. The norm will always operate through key actors, whichever states they are. So that it's state-centric, right? Well, let's assume that in terms of political responsibility. Given its necessary inconsistency as an international policy within a system of states, R2P acquires then the hues of a political norm that fades in and out according to political juncture and to the performance of specific state actors. Consequently, one is just as wrong to predict the death of R2P as to anticipate its coronation in customary international law. Embedded in political contingency, R2P has an essentially unpredictable future. And to one side of the normative struggles of non-governmental actors and IOs who seek rule extension in world politics, and great, this future will be based on the specific performances of R2P, particularly the endpoint of the use of force, which is why, perhaps contrary to some people here, I think it is always important to go back to Libya. With this political approach to R2P made, I now turn to the linkage of R2P refugee regime. I hope I'm not going to run out of time. Bringing to bear the international norm of R2P onto the contemporary refugee crisis and the global refugee regime as a whole helps the understanding and functioning of both. There's mutual reinforcement. First, bringing R2P into conjunction with the refugee crisis with prevention and resettlement strategies emphasizes its overriding humanitarianism. At the precise moment when attempting to replace the principle of humanitarian interventionism, it has got boxed into a militarist corner. Since the perception of R2P militarism has been acute in post-colonial countries, and since it is historically now that the trigger principle of residual state responsibility can begin to be shared among West and non-Western states, there is a strong cosmopolitan logic, I would argue, to talking about asylum procedures and resettlement in terms of the spectrum of responses that make up R2P, not only for those who suffer, but also, I'll go back here to Chloe, for those who aid. A second reason for the salience of the linkage concerns the double standards criticism that has dogged most performances of R2P hitherto. The current global refugee crisis, where emergent at the gateways to Northern Europe, has pointed out the double standards and hypocrisy of major liberal states, if not the European Union as a whole. As noted at the beginning, For Jennifer Welsh, the international norm of R2P framed for liberal states a responsible foreign policy, not considering it a moral principle that, according to the circumstances, carries immediate domestic responsibilities. States like France and the UK have undermined the seriousness of their own broader motives. In other words, there's a crisis of international political legitimacy here. I think that is absolutely fundamental at this moment of restructuring of global powers. So the R2P, it's big. Yeah? It's a very big crisis that's going on. And since perceptions produce reality in an interdependent world, not to make a public link between recent foreign policies and refugee obligations has proven very poor statecraft. Consciously widening the spectrum of responses to mass human suffering not only brings back into focus the non-military aspects of R2P, it points to the fact that this spectrum of responses actually transcends, as Chloe has said so well, actually transcends the foreign domestic policy distinction in the first place. That's where it's radical. Importantly, and here I refer to Dan's very interesting words, it has taken the European dimension of the global refugee crisis, as well as the failure of statecraft in response to it, to foreground the multifaceted nature of R2P state responsibility, that it is, and that it can be thought, as both domestic and foreign. How many minutes have I got left now?
Seven.
Okay, I'll just keep going and then you just stop. Second, how specifically does R2P help the refugee regime within the terms of this comprehensive package? The residual responsibility within the second and third pillars of R2P, of the international community, in inverted commas, to help protect citizens from extreme forms of violence, connotes, as we all know, a collective state responsibility towards undue human suffering. This framework and mindset of collective responsibility reinforces at the levels of normative expectation and political will the legal requirements of the global refugee regime. So in this specific sense, and I think this is now coming through from various statements of diplomats and policy formers, the normative framework of R2P can act as a normative catalyst for shaping political will towards the refugee regime, shoring up, in other words, a legally given but politically weak international responsibility and fostering political judgment when to act, who acts, how to act in the alleviation of human suffering. Second, R2P is considered able to extend and deepen the normative terms of the global refugee regime in order to supplement its legal rigidity. I'll go quickly here. Resource insecurity, resource conflict, and the consequences of climate change more generally are already and will become increasingly major drivers of flight. Migration experts like Alex Beck, for example, argues that it would be a mistake to supplement the existing refugee regime by looking at particular causes of cross-border displacement, and advocates, in contrast, a general protection perspective that, in relation to the right to asylum or temporary forms of protection, focuses on the underlying threshold of human and civil rights, which, when inaccessible in a particular country, necessitates cross-border flight. So thinking of the way in which R2P homogenizes existing international law but does not add to it, he just suggests, consequently, a soft law approach, a normative approach, that provides an environment for the protection of basic rights, irrespective of the cause of flight, rather than the negotiation of new binding rules beyond persecution. In sum, and I think this is important for future years, in terms of plugging governance gaps in the current refugee regime, Betts and others are basically arguing, even if they don't use the word directly, and for me here language isn't critical, basically arguing that R2P will play a constructive international normative role with regard to forced displacement in general. And I think that is a very interesting horizon, but it's full of dilemmas. It provides states with an internationally accepted framework of standards of behaviour that translates, and this is important for one for us in this conference, to regional and national levels. So in sum, when considering the way in which R2P and the global refugee regime mutually reinforce one another, focusing on how R2P functions as political norm is very useful. R2P provides a normative environment in which political motivation for responsibility can be fashioned at the state level, within a particular state, state responsibility, and among states, collective responsibility, both to reinforce the refugee regime and extend it beyond its existing terms of persecution. Providing this normative environment, R2P serves less as a moral principle than as a catalyst to political action in response to the non-protection of the vulnerable in general. Through being embedded in political contingency, I am arguing, in other words, R2P can be a means to, not a distraction from, morally informed action towards the displaced. Graham? Right. Okay, so let me just end with one paragraph on the dilemmas. Okay, so there are dilemmas, nevertheless, with these positions. The position, of, basically arguing, and I haven't gone through it because I have to get this sort of position that basically the norm is in place, but it is the question of implementation. And the position, on the other hand, no, the norm is actually R2P provides a normative environment in which we can really pursue the question of normative entrepreneurship for forced displacement in general, especially with coming existential threats to populations which are not based on persecution, climate change. First, there is the dilemma between restricting refugee protection to specific cases of persecution and generalizing the regime so that one can respond to new patterns of displacement. Opting for the latter may undo the political work of the former. And in an age of rising populism and nationalism, this risk is a very important consideration. Second, there is the consequent dilemma between ensuring as well as possible specific protection of those suffering from serious conflict-induced harm and developing R2P to respond to ever more complex scenarios of human deprivation. Opting for the latter may undo the political work of the former. atrocity crimes will occur again, and it is rightly argued that in a divided political world, the more trained the international response can be in terms of both norm and implementation, the better the intergovernmental consensus is held. Third, there is the deeper dilemma, I'm getting to the end, within the normative framework of R2P itself, between a specific primary and secondary responsibility to protect citizens, whatever the state, and the more general conception and practice of sovereignty as responsibility. Opting for the latter with regard to an array of post-national threats, and that discourse is becoming big, risks undoing the political work of the former, the circumscription of atrocity crimes, and the endpoint of the use of military intervention. Fourth and finally, there is a dilemma which we all know, underpinning the last, between a conception of sovereignty based on the principle of sovereign state independence and a conception of sovereignty based on the principles of state accountability and response. These two conceptions, as we know, still present different political appraisals of international governance, order and justice, and they can clash despite the intergovernmental consensus since 2005. However well-intended, opting for the conception of sovereignty as responsibility risks introducing disorder and injustice under the material conditions of the state system. Here again, contestation around the endpoint of the use of force simply lays bare a general, and this is my major point, a general structural problem imminent to R2P as such, and which must be taken on by statecraft if we're going to rehearse the dilemmas of R2P and increase its overall normative environment. And at this point in time, state leaders are refusing to take on these dilemmas. And as a result, there's an extraordinary lack of political responsibility towards vulnerability. Thank you very much.
Perfect. Thank you.